the McDouble is here to add some sizzle to your day. And now you can enjoy it with McDonald's 4 for 4 deal. Choose between a cheesy McDouble or a delightfully crispy McChicken. Then add 4-piece chicken McNuggets, a small order of crispy fries, and a refreshing medium-sized soft drink like an ice-cold Coke for just $4. Now that's a tasty deal. Swing by and add some sizzle to your day with McDonald's 4 for 4. Price and participation may vary, cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. The McDouble is here to add some sizzle to your day. And now you can enjoy it with McDonald's 4 for 4 deal. Choose between a cheesy McDouble or a delightfully crispy McChicken. Then add 4-piece chicken McNuggets, a small order of crispy fries, and a refreshing medium-sized soft drink like an ice-cold Coke for just $4. Now that's a tasty deal. Swing by and add some sizzle to your day with McDonald's 4 for 4. Price and participation may vary, cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
We are live on Discovery Paranormal. I am on the road in a hotel room coming at you from Viral Central. And I will tell you this, people are panicking and flipping out, man. People are freaking out so much. You know what? I don't know what the hell they're going to do. And I feel sorry for people who, you know what? It's a scary thing. It's a scary thing, you know? And I think that, especially for children, you know, I think that you need to talk to your kids, and I think that you need to keep your kids away from the TV set. If it comes to that, I have a friend that, you know, her daughter is very young. She's 11 years old, and she's hooked on the TV. She's hooked on the media. She wants to see all the news on this. And it's all it is, man, is being bombarded with it. Is it threatening? Sure. Is it bad? Yeah. Is it terrible? No. You know, as viruses go, you could have an Ebola with a 90% case fatality rate, and that's pretty goddamn scary. But this thing, yeah, sure, it kills basically 1 out of 100 people here in the U.S. that get infected by it, you know. But it's something that you just have to be strong, and be strong for your family, and be strong for your kids. And, you know, I see what's going on out there. And, you know, it prompted me to make a decision that I want to hit the road, and I want to do it in a safe way. You know, I don't want to have people think I'm cruising out there in a Jeep across America, and I have New York license plates, and I'm the infector monkey, and I'm going around infecting people, you know. But probably next week, I got a feeling things are going to calm down a little bit by next week. I think people will come to terms with living with their new arrangements of their social distancing. You know, when they put out the list of quarantine or self-quarantine, you know, not touching anyone, no hugging, kissing, social distance, no groups. I was like, it's my everyday life. It's not like something that, oh my God, I can't believe I can't do these things. You know, well, that's me. So I'm an introvert. Some people are extroverts, and they need to go out and party and go crazy. And now they're the ones who are stuck inside. And, you know, there's a theory that if you have this type of thing, and, you know, a lot of states closed businesses, like in New York here, you know, most businesses are shuttered. And they say that, you know, the business, non-essential businesses need to close, right? And then really, it comes down to perspective of what the hell you think essential is. And like, there are a lot of women out there that probably thinks it's essential to get their nails done, you know, and they have to go get do that, you know. But that's not technically essential. So, and I would say the whole hair thing. I mean, I put off getting a haircut because I was looking for a new barber. My last barber gave me the barber itch, you know, these guys, and they're old. I've been going there forever. And, you know, there's no point. People are like, oh yeah, you know, go talk to the guy and tell him. I'm like, I'm not going to do that. There's no point. You can tell someone, maybe they'll clean their stuff a little bit for a little while, but then they get sloppy again. I'm not that type of person. I know what I went through for a few weeks, though. It was terrible. So I was looking for a new barber. And it's all salons now. There was one guy, Sal's Barbershop. I called him up And then it said salon. I'm like, salon? What happened to barbershop? They're like, oh, we changed that. I'm like, yeah, bye. I don't need that, me personally. So I have long hair. And I'm going to keep this hair until the end of the apocalypse, apparently, because all the places that cut hair now are closed. So in New York, there's a stay inside, right? You can go out and get food, but you got to go home or wherever the hell you're going, your hotel room or wherever. If you're homeless, I don't know where you go. You know, I was incensed last week when they were putting these orders in place, and, you know, it was actually Mike Pence who had said, hey, you know, you got to be in a home and, you know, you got to get, you know, like basically all the stuff he said didn't apply to a lot of people who are out there. And it's pretty sad, actually, that those guys aren't taken into consideration. You know, in California has a huge homeless problem, like a lot of places do. And they say, well, they should seek shelter. Like, you got to stay in your home. But for the homeless, you should seek shelter. Like, what's a nice thing to say? You should seek shelter. You should. Right. Which is ridiculous, because if they could, they would have it and they wouldn't be homeless, basically, unless they like being out there. Some of them do. Some of them think that that's their freedom, you know, and they're a lot of them are deranged and they need help. And there's no mandated mental health for people like that. So it really comes down to, I don't want to say overreaction with this virus. I think that you need to react promptly, swiftly, and minimize the damage. You know, you got to mitigate. I think all that was done, you know, some of it was done, in my opinion, weeks late. But you're talking about a bunch of people that don't really have a head for this, I guess, you know, and you would think that the CDC would be right on it, you know, right on it. Like, this is what they train for. This is what they do. And then you realize it's not, that the CDC basically is their own organization. You know, they have patents on a lot of stuff that they create. And they're not innocent by any means when it comes to developing biological weapons. I mean, like, a lot of these, you know, there are all these agencies have their hands in that. The governments have their hands in it. It's a dirty term. It's something that they don't want to talk about, because you don't want to create those kinds of bugs and have them get out and start killing everybody, you know. So, which a lot of people, including myself, believe that that's what this one is, since it just happened to come from Wuhan, and that's China's biggest bioweapons facility. And, you know, and then there, years ago, not even 3-4 years ago, they were forewarned by all the scientists around the world saying, don't do it, don't do it. Something's going to get out. It's going to be a huge problem. Wow. Well, there's a huge problem. And then, of course, you know, you can't believe China at their word. But tonight's show, aside from dealing with the emotion, and it's very hard for a lot of people, like I said, young people, regular old people, then there's the non-believers, the virus deniers, you know, I don't believe in that, or it's just the government trying to mess with us, take our rights away. You got a lot of that. Or, you know, I've heard a lot of, oh, it's 5G. They turned on 5G telephone signals and it's killing people, you know. So humans are funny, because people want to jump to any kind of answer that makes sense to them individually, right? But it just necessarily is not the proper answer, you know? So I think that the proper answer is, it's a nasty bug. And it's a nasty bug that it has the capability of killing people. But I also think that it's on its way down. And I'll tell you why. This is my theory, right? When the bug first came out, right, in China, it killed a lot of people. I think that, you know, China, they said that 3,000 people were killed, probably 30, 40, 50,000, maybe more, you know, and I understand that a couple of million actually have the virus. So, but they lie, and it's a whole communist thing, and they want to keep information from you, and, you know, this is what they do, right? So, unfortunately, you don't have those numbers to go by. There's a company called Tencent, which is a Chinese company, multi-conglomerate. They do a lot of different things. They even make video games and all that. They also publish, hospital records. So when this whole thing was happening in Wuhan and Hubei, they were publishing, and then about, 4 or 5 days in a row, they put these huge numbers out, 250,000 had. This is after the second week, the third week that this outbreak had happened, 250,000 with 29,000 dead. And the next day, the numbers increased, and the next day, the numbers increased. And then the Chinese government changed it, and they said, oh, no. They made a mistake. And it's not likely the company made a mistake. It's likely that those were the real numbers. So we can't go by the numbers worldwide. You have to exclude China, because those aren't real numbers. They're, the infected and the death. You have to go by the rest of the countries. Now, I think that was the original bug. It probably had a real high case fatality rate of about 30-40%. That's how many people killed, 3 to 4 out of 10 people it encountered. If you heard stories from Wuhan about people dropping dead in the street, laying, dead outside of hospitals, all that. There was plenty of stories out there. And as they were told, the Chinese government went around arresting those people. So that was the original bug, right? Now, what happens when you have a virus that so-called never encountered another human being? Now, obviously, if it came from the lab and affected any kind of technicians, or it was released on purpose, you really don't know how it got out. We only know that it got out. But let's say you're the first generation who receives this bug, the first bug. Bug goes in your body doesn't know how to fight it, right? But your antibodies understand it's still a coronavirus, and it's seen other coronaviruses, most likely, colds, flus, whatever. So it knows a little bit, but doesn't know the most part. And then it eats up your antibodies, basically, and opens you up to infection. And then you get some horrible disease like MERS or SARS, and you die, right? And that's kind of how it goes with this virus. Super strong. So fill your lungs full of fluid, kill your kidneys out, you're done. You know what I mean? That's why it's important to have respirators. Everybody's asking for respirators because of that right there. So that's the first wave. The second wave, high mortality rate. Well, fatality. Mortality rate and fatality rate is two different things. A case fatality rate is the number of dead against all the people who were infected. A mortality rate is the number of dead against the entire population of that area, or that country, or whatever you're talking about, So I think that second bug in Italy, when that ship docked and that Chinese woman from Hubei who is sick gets off the ship and they test her for coronavirus. And then within just a few hours, they said, oh, no, she's OK. She can leave. They kept 6,000 people on the ship. They let 1,000 people off the ship to go roam through Rome and go be sightseers and that type of thing. Right. And they did. And not a few days after that, they started getting their first, coronavirus patients coming in, right? Italy, very heavy, very dense areas. A lot of towns in Italy, not a lot of great sewage, I would say. In some places, yeah, some places, no. In Rome, they have a huge garbage problem right now, and there's wild boars running around. And there's issues there, for sure. But I think those Italian authorities lied, number one, saying they tested that woman for coronavirus and she didn't have it. At that point, it took 5 days to do a test, not 12 hours. It took 5 days. I think they just lied because they wanted to get that ship out of there, and they just figured get it the hell out of here, right? And they did, certainly. So I think that Italy got the second generation of the bug somewhere around there. Really high case fatality rate. And I also think that Spain, and I'd say that same ship parked there too, that Spain also got nailed with the same thing, that second or third version. Because if you look at Spain and Italy, their numbers are very similar of the case fatality rate, which is around 8%, 9%, which is pretty big. Our case fatality rate in the United States has been dropping. At one point, it was 6.8%. And then it kept going down, down. But they weren't testing that many people. And the more people you test, they find out that they're positive, and that, you know, that goes against the dead, because the dead are the dead. And someone dies, you're going to actually do an autopsy, find out why they died. You're going to know they had a coronavirus or something. But I'd say there's probably about, you know, maybe 100,000 or more people out there, maybe even more, that have the coronavirus that aren't getting sick, or had it, didn't get sick, or had it and got sick but got better. They didn't realize it was some kind of thing. So there's a lot of that going on. Until those numbers are sorted out, you're not going to truly know that case fatality rate, but we do know the amount of the dead, you know? So that's not really too much of a variable here. The other numbers are, right? And same thing for South Korea. They have the same type of run that we have, you know, and some places have very little. There was outbreak in Africa. It's not very big right now. People thought it was going to grow and be huge. You know, I think the hot, dry air has a lot to do with it, you know. But then they tested the one ship that was in Japan, right? And they found the virus alive after 17 days. 17 days. And then you would tell me these hospital ships are good. Why? It seems like that's the best possible situation for this bug to breed and be alive, you know, is on a ship. It's damp, dank. It's got everything. It's got all the building blocks of life for it, doesn't it? So I think you'd want that hot and dry versus that. But it's a problem. And New York City's got a huge outbreak. And, you know, on my other show, Michael Angley Live, I talked about the rat population in New York. It's not really a pleasant subject. And, you know, rats carry plague. It's also the year of the rat, Chinese calendar. And, you know, you have a situation where you're not going to be able to put a stop to it once. I mean, I'm guaranteed it already is. Guaranteed it's already, you know, under the city, in the city, running around. And a lot of people encounter those rats, including the homeless population, right? So tonight I want to talk about, after half an hour, I want to talk about empaths, man, because the regular old people out there who are feeling this, you know, like I said, the kids and the people can't wrap their head. Imagine an empath. Imagine being an empath. And like me personally, man, oh my God, I felt this sucker coming for such a long time. There was a 13-year clock in my head ticking down, seriously, to some kind of thing. And it was clicking down, ticking down, bang, and it finally hit. And I'm like, wow, and now it's gone, which is even weirder. But I have a lot of friends who are empaths who are reaching out to me, and they're like, I want to laugh. I want to cry. I want to, you know, scream and tear people's hand, throw a punch, somebody, all kinds of emotions, because empath is emotion, empathy, sort of. So if you are an empath, if you're feeling, let's say, if you know you are, that's good. If you don't know you are, you want to listen to the show. And even if you know you are, because maybe stuff I talk about is going to help you out. So I'm going to go with the 13 signs that you are an empath, okay? So number one, you take on other people's emotions as your own. And any empath will know that. You feel that if someone's grieving or if someone's happy and elated, you can just kind of soak it on up, man. So whether you want to or not. And it's important to understand how to shut those things off. You know, it's like a sponge. And sometimes people end up carrying it with them for a long time, you know. So how it works is a subject for debate, right? But we do know that people who have high levels of empathy also have very active mirror neutrons, right? So that's the part of the brain that reads emotional cues from other people and figures out why they might be thinking or feeling. Or in other words, if you're an empath, it's like you can pick up on tiny changes in expressions, body language, or tone of voice. And I'll tell you, it's more about being observant, but also spiritually observant, something that you're feeling. It's not just the cues. You could close your eyes and still have those same feelings, and, you know, you're not just looking at body language. It's a very small part of it. So the same active mirror neutrons, however, mean that you basically live through the feeling as if it were your own. So that could be a powerful gift and also exhausting and overwhelming. Number two, sometimes you experience sudden overwhelming emotions when you're in public. So it's not just a one-on-one conversation when you talk to somebody. It's an emotional conversation, right? And I got this friend, and she was really emotional all the time. And I'd see her. The first thing she wanted to do was come up to me and give me a hug. Just like run up to me. I freaking hate that because I don't like being touched. Empaths don't really like to be touched. I don't like being touched, you know? That's why I said for this no touching thing, only certain people, certain times. I'm not a cold fish. I'm not closed off. But as for someone, you know, someone that you barely even like or know comes running at you in the middle of a supermarket, like a vulture. She swoops in like a vulture. And then she's all like, I was in church and I told this and whatever. And I told this story and blah, 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 blah. She would talk so much, she would use up all the oxygen. And I'd be like getting lightheaded, listening to all this stuff. And then it's all about the stories of emotional stories. It's not just telling you what happened and when it happened. See, that's what a guy would do. What, when, where, how, and how, where, whatever, you know? Whatever. Women, oh my God, you know, I talked to my mother and it was so emotional and and she was so mean and I was like, oh my God. And then I went downtown. Someone cut me off and it made me feel so bad. They're like, oh man. I'm like, you talking to me the whole time? So it's important that, especially when, you know, it's nice if you're in a large group of people at a concert, man. Everybody's having a good time. They're soaking up your music. The music is good. It causes a good vibe and you're feeling it. And it's good. Then you're like, yeah, man, that's a nice type of feeling. And that's good for an empath to be around. But empaths don't like crowds, really. So it really comes down to, and, you know, empaths tend to avoid crowds because it's too crowdy. You know, it's just people talking, everything. I think it's probably a lot different if you're at a show and you're watching a show and everybody's kind of focused on the one thing. But when everybody else is focusing on each other or other things around, I think that's what causes this kind of like rift feeling of you know, confusion or not being focused or something like that. You know what I mean? So it's better to, you have to actually like build a wall around yourself, you know, like shield yourself literally. And then you can kind of focus. I mean, cause I go in a lot of busy places. I was an entertainment writer for a while and, you know, Long Island. So 7 days a week, I was going to clubs, other things, shows, talk about being around a lot of people. I don't think you'd find too many empaths in situations like that. But I enjoyed it because I controlled it. You know, I controlled what I was doing and I was able to float about and my own thing. So it's if you can successfully shield yourself, you know, there are a lot of psychics that have a hard time doing that. A lot of mediums have a very hard time doing that. And you have to really read a lot about it and study or you know, you talk to mediums who are successful. So they can tell you, hey, this is how to cut it off, especially if you're trying to sleep at night. So number three, the vibe of a room matters to you a lot. So unsurprisingly, empaths are extremely sensitive to that feel of any atmosphere in their surroundings. But when surrounded by peace and calm, empaths flourish because they take on those places, just like that good concert. You know, if you're at some kind of nice event or in a museum, unless the museum's haunted, you got to pick your museums carefully, man. But if you're just having a good time, it's nice to absorb that. So number four, you understand where people are coming from. And that's why people seek you out, because they want to talk to you, because you understand. It's not just like, you know, people, you talk about your problems and people are like, oh, yeah, whatever. Ah, yeah, okay, whatever. And they're not really getting it. and they ask you what's going on, that's like the worst thing. Hey, how you doing? That's like the worst thing. Hey, how you doing? Don't ask me how I'm doing, because I'll tell you. And I don't think you have that much time. So, but having that understanding for other people is empathy, right? It's fundamentally empathy. So, number five, people turn to you for advice because you listen to them. You want to hear them. You know, you have an interest. Some of the times, much of the time, unless they're swooping in on you like a vulture and they want to just grab onto you and kind of, right? You're not ready for it. And now it's a different excuse. You know, what's that social distancing? Oh, I can't give you a hug. I wish I could hug you. I should go to that store where that woman's hanging out like all the time and then see her and be like, oh, social distancing. But yeah, empaths are good listeners. Number six, tragic or violent events on TV can completely incapacitate you. And I'll tell you, and even because if it's real, you're feeling that, man, you know, and, you know, it does no difference. If something happens on the other side of the earth, you feel that. You can feel that. I know people feeling this stuff all day long. And, oh, God, when those animals were dying in Australia from those forest fires, every empath I know was crying and just on the floor, didn't know what to do. And you just feeling those lives slip away, you know, terribly too. You know what I mean? So I would stay away from any of that, watching any of that stuff, including the news sometimes if you can't handle it, you know. Number seven, you can't contain your love for your pets, animals, and babies. And that's me, man. I love it. If I have a pet, I love them. You know, my last cat, Puffy, was my boy, and, you know, I had him for a long time. He died of cancer. It killed me. But you know, it's like you have that bond and you feel it. You feel what they're thinking, what they want. It's kind of an interesting relationship, you know, in how animals communicate with people and back and forth. So every empath I know loves animals and usually has a few of them around, or a lot of them around, and, you know, and they feel in tune and happy with that. Right. So number eight, you might feel people's physical illness too, not just their emotions. Yeah. I have a friend who was a physical therapist, and they were able to help people because they actually felt exactly what kind of pain it was and where the pain was. Pretty amazing. And obviously they were very successful doing what they're doing because they had an ability that enabled them to help heal, you know, very important to do, especially in this world of this world where there's a lot of healing needed out there a lot. So, and then, you know what, if you're that type of person, that's the kind of business you want to be in, man. You know what I mean? So number nine, you can be overwhelmed in intimate relationships. So I'll tell you about relationships. They are very difficult sometimes, especially for an empath, because you end up feeling, you know, people can't really deceive you in ways, and you end up feeling, I mean, they can, they can't. It depends if you let it happen. It's more like if you let it happen. But especially if you're in a relationship with a narcissistic person, or somebody who's toxic or controlling, and you're an empath, and you're that loving, light-giving type of person, man, that's like the worst possible situation. And they will drain you and wear you down and beat you down until you have nothing left, not one shred, nothing. And, you know, and then they move on to somebody else if they can do that too. And that's how that works. So it's difficult to, you know, to be an empath, you need to find another empath, or you find somebody that is so neutral that the only thing they want from you is just your love and respect and your loyalty and that type of stuff. Right. So number 10, you're a walking lie detector test. If you're an empath, like I said before about deception, you know, empaths usually feel it. If someone's not being forthwith with you, you can feel that, man. And you're like, hey, there's something going on, something amidst, or sometimes you don't, you know, you catch people in a lie. You don't even say it because you want them to lie more. You want to kind of laugh in their face as they keep doing it. So number 11, you can't understand why any leader wouldn't put their teams first, right? So this is business-wise. There are plenty of managers and group organizers who don't pay attention to their team's needs. If you're an empath, this isn't just rude or annoying. It's a failure of leadership because you can see it. If something's like so simple that you can see, it's frustrating, right? So empaths can make great leaders themselves. And when they do, it's always by listening to their team and uniting people around shared goals. If you read anything about business and about team leadership, understanding people's emotions and understanding where they're coming from and their perception is very important, man. So number 12, you have a calming effect on other people and the power to heal them. So I think part of that is you're easy to talk to, right? They come to you, they feel comfortable. Once you're comfortable with someone, they open up and you're open and it's kind of nice. It goes back and forth, you know, and there's something to that that's very important in humanity, I think, when people connect on that level. And you know what? You don't have to be an empath to connect on that level. There are plenty of times that you can get to a relationship and you just click with somebody, man. You click with them so well, you know, whether that's a, you know, a loving personal relationship, you know, sexual relationship, you know, business relationship. There are people you just click with, boom, boom, boom. And it's like you found your other, you know, the whole yin yang thing. So that's a nice part of it, you know, if you think in those terms, right? But number 13 is an empath feels pain and it will feel that other pain. Just like, you know, how you feel, like I talk about the therapist who was feeling pain of their clients, right? An empath will sometimes feel the pain in their body, you know, and sometimes they can't be around certain people because they feel that, or they, you know, feel there's some kind of danger amidst, you know, there's that too. Empaths have it bad sometimes. But like with me, there's a lot of things that I don't like that I tend to stay away from. Like I said, the whole crowded restaurant thing. I went into Texas Roadhouse. It's a chain restaurant, right? And I was actually meeting other mediums there. I was there. We were setting a thing up to go help this person who was having issues in their house. And these women can kind of neutralize and clean the place really well. You know, I do it too. In this situation, I think that the more the merrier. So we go, the girl who has the place ends up standing us up, which is a pain in the butt to begin with. And we ended up in Texas Roadhouse to have a meal. You know, I told them I'd take them out because they came, they drove an hour for nothing, basically. So we go into this place. It was my first time in there, and I thought it would be all right. You know, like, it's a restaurant. It's like the freaking Bawdy Barn in there, man. And everybody's yelling and screaming. There's a lot of TV screens up all around with sports and whatever going on. Empath nightmare. If you want to torture an empath, you take them to Texas Roadhouse because, oh, my God, you would have to have a freaking helmet on to not – see or hear what's going on. But the feeling, man, just that constant motion and running around. And then we had this girl, a waitress, real cute girl. She knew one of the people at the table and she was like just little blonde who was like popping around. She had the energy for like 15 people. It's like she drank a whole bunch of those energy drinks. She was shooting through the roof, you know? And I looked at my friend Pete and I'm like, you know, cause we do these investigations and stuff, like, Pete, I can't handle this, man. I got to go outside, man. Some people go outside to smoke cigarettes. Empath to go outside just to breathe the goddamn air. Like, oh, man, I got to get out of there. But there's situations that are so heavy, you know, and especially with drama, if there's some drama going on, oh, my God, that's a situation that's just, you start soaking it up. But I know people, I also know empaths that love drama. They're feeling it. But right now, all of the empaths I know, people who are reaching out to me, people I haven't heard from in a long time even, like, this is killing me. What am I going to do? This virus, I'm feeling it. They're feeling a whole range of emotions, man. up and down, back and forth. And they're scared because they have an inkling of the reality of this. So when something is known, you can pretty much know what to do to deal with it, as long as it's within your spectrum of solutions, you know. But it's something that you don't know. It's day by day, and it's a matter of handling things from past experiences of similar events or similar things and how they went. And that's like right now what the CDC and the WHO is doing. They're just going day by day and trying to mitigate, keep people apart with this virus, you know. And a lot of people aren't listening. You saw, you know, maybe you didn't see it, maybe you saw it in the media, how a lot of these students went to spring break and they weren't able to party. So some of them tried, and you know, a few of them ended up walking away with coronavirus. They tested positive. That's kind of interesting. But it's not easy to upend your life and say, okay, this is how it's going to be. But humans are very resilient creatures, obviously, since, you know, they've survived so long through so much, you know, and this is just another step of that humanity. And I think that it's terrible. It's killing people. It is what it is in that realm. And in another realm, it's also bringing some people together. It's uniting people in different ways. So that's something interesting. And, you know, not everything. I mean, it's, you know, it's a terrible negative thing what's going on, but not in this situation. We can still find something that is positive. And, you know, like initially when they were saying, you know, oh, the flu, it's like the flu. It's not like the flu. When they're saying that the flu kills more people, it doesn't kill more people. You know, the case fatality rate for the flu is like 0.08. And this sucker is at still around 1.3. So definitely big difference, right? And then think about, they say the Spanish flu. Yeah, 1918 Spanish flu, also known as the avian flu, also known as the bird flu. Spanish flu killed lots of people. I watched a dude on, I was flipping around the channels. I put it on MSNBC just to laugh because I like to see their faces all sad. That's MSNBC. I don't get what's going on in the media. They just hate Trump to hate him. You know, if you're going to hate him, have a reason to hate him. I don't love him. I don't hate him. But, you know, if he does something wrong, I say it. If he does something right, I say it. But these guys, the ones who love him will never say he did anything wrong. The ones who hate him will never say he did anything right. So I think overall people like his handling of this whole thing. But so on MSNBC, the guy was like, talking about the Spanish flu, reading from his little teleprompter, you know, the Spanish flu killed 250 billion people around the world. I'm like, 250 billion people. That's kind of a hard thing, since we only have like 7.5 billion now, you know, so I'm sure he meant 250 million people. It was probably more around 190. The thing with the Spanish flu, it was hard to tell how many people it killed because there wasn't that many reliable ways of counting the dead. You know, there was 1918. There was no air traffic going back and forth. You know, there was no commercial airliners, nothing like that. So now we have commercial airlines, and you can see how this flu came from China and swept all throughout the world, whether intentionally or not. So for everybody out there, including empaths, you just have to, live your life, you know, you live your life, and you can't, you know, don't be sloppy. Wash your hands. Of course you should wash your hands anyway, right? Ridiculous that they say, you know, reminding people to wash their hands. Oh my God. Oh yeah. Yeah. Wipe your butt. Make sure you wipe your butt. Yeah. Yeah. Like you got to tell people, maybe you do have to tell some people, I don't know, man, but I think that ultimately this thing is changing. And like I was saying earlier about the generations and generations of this virus, I think as I see it change, I look at the symptoms, what symptoms is causing. Now it's starting to cause diarrhea, which will make everybody really happy who bought all that toilet paper. You will feel vindicated now, since you, you'll be sitting and chitting and using your hoarded toilet paper. But it wasn't doing that initially, you know. So symptoms are changing more into a basic coronavirus, I feel. And I think that you're going to see that case fatality rate keep going down and down. Businesses can't stay closed for long. You know, this has really screwed up our economy. It's taking trillions and trillions of bucks out of our economy. And luckily, I'll say this, lucky the economy was so good. Because where the stock market is now is when Trump took over and he added, you know, trillions into it. It was up around 30, and now it's like 20, you know, 20,000. So that's like Barack Obama days. Imagine if it was 20 when the whole thing started, and it'd be down like 10,000. Then people would really be flipping out, jumping out of windows because they'd be losing their shirt. The one thing I don't understand is why they didn't freeze the stock market like in other massive events like 9/11, where they froze the market, and they didn't do that in this case. So now it's a wild ride, and this is when people make their money. You buy low, you sell high, and you have to just kind of, you know. I mean, you know what? If Apple stock goes down a whole bunch, you know it's going to go back up again. It's kind of an easy thing to think about. So this is when people make their money. Just don't make stupid decisions. You go with companies that are known for doing well. So, and when they take a big hit, they always come back every time. Apple goes down 20, 30 points, you buy it, it'll be back, you know, a few days later, maybe a week later, even higher. So that's how you make your dough. Anyway, you guys take care of yourself. The new thing to say to people is don't get sick. Don't get sick. That's kind of a dumb thing to say. It's not something you can really control necessarily, especially if this bug can stay in the air for days and live on surfaces. Stay in the air for hours, live on surfaces for days. And then if it really lived on that ship for 17 days, and that's so far, wow. This is all still pretty new. I mean, we're just getting into March, or we're most of the way through March. We're almost in April, but this is all, you know, this is springtime. We're all pretty new. And I think it's going to get worse, but then get better. I'm going to give it 2 to 4 weeks until basically it's backed off and starts going away. So we'll see what happens then. But that's my prediction. And I think that more and more people getting tested, you're going to see more and more people have it. And then you might be the infector monkey. You know, you might be running around infecting other people because you can have it and not know you have it and not have any symptoms. That's what gets me too. You know, you can't get tested unless you have symptoms. If you have symptoms, they're like, okay, go get tested. Even some cases they don't. But if you don't have symptoms, then how the hell do you know? You don't. And then you're just going around spreading it around. So anyway, I will see you guys next week on the show. I'm going to be on the road and, you know, next week for the paranormal show, I'm going to visit somebody, maybe in Pittsburgh, I don't know, and talk about the paranormal, man. And we'll see what goes on. I want to take it day by day. I'm going to be broadcasting from the road daily and making my way out west towards Vegas, that type of thing. I want to talk to people in cities all across America about this whole virus and how it affects them and how they feel. So I'm calling it Michael Angley is going viral. So keep an eye out for that, because it'll be starting next week there about, and we'll definitely let you know. This is Michael Angley on Discovery Paranormal, and I will see you guys next week on this here show on United Public Radio Network, UPRN Talk Radio. Strong. Gnarlins. Gnarlins. Bye.
You good, baby.
The McDouble is here to add some sizzle to your day. And now you can enjoy it with McDonald's 4-for-4 deal. Choose between a cheesy McDouble or a delightfully crispy McChicken. Then add 4-piece chicken McNuggets, a small order of crispy fries, and a refreshing medium-sized soft drink like an ice cold Coke for just $4. Now that's a tasty deal. Swing by and add some sizzle to your day with McDonald's 4-for-4. Price and participation may vary, cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.